Thank you for listening, but please be advised that I don't just believe shit I hear on podcasts, and I hope you don't either. Be skeptical and look into things for yourself. If you find that I was wrong about something, the best thing you can do for me is to let me know. You can do that at livingthroughextinction@gmail.com. Please also be aware of the fact that I do swear and I don't bleep anything out, so listener discretion is advised. This is episode 109 of Living Through Extinction, a short to the point podcast with science and skepticism, environment and wildlife, and stuff I find important or interesting that I want to learn more about. Today I talk about the GMO-free labeling scams, organic labeling fraud, an advance on how treatment can be administered to cystic fibrosis patients, and the Phelps family, particularly Fred Phelps and the Westboro Baptist Church. If you've joined me before, then thank you for returning. I really do appreciate you. If this is your first time listening to Living Through Extinction, welcome. I hope you find it both fun and informative. And if you're interested in supporting the show, all the possible ways are listed after the final segment and thank yous. The GMO-free label, while sometimes legit, is more often than not a labeling scam. It's a simple packaging trick used to make more money. For example, you may see two bags of oranges in the grocery store, and the only differences are price and the fact that one of them is labeled GMO-free. The one with the GMO-free label will definitely be the more expensive one. But there are no GMO oranges on the market at this time. So what they are doing is taking the same product and giving a certain percentage of that product a GMO-free label so they can bring in a higher dollar value for the product overall. Just like in 2016 when Hunt's bragged that its products contain no GMO tomatoes, and there were no GMO tomatoes on the market at the time. In other words, all products with tomatoes had no GMO tomatoes in them. Or when Evolution Salt branded their Himalaya salt as being GMO-free. Salt is a rock, for fuck's sake. It doesn't have DNA. There is no such thing as a GMO'd rock, and that includes salt. It's deception. Yet in 2015, Pew Research showed 57% of Americans thought GMOs were unsafe to eat. In 2018, a report showed that 46% of shoppers deliberately avoided GMOs when buying groceries. They've effectively villainized the food that poor people can afford, because GMOs are not only typically safer, but also typically cheaper. If GMOs were completely gone rid of, there would be less food and it would cost a lot more. And it would be no safer than what's out there right now. People keep saying we should go back to the older ways, but do you know how foods were modified before our current GMO abilities? In the 60s and 70s, nobody was complaining about the modified food. Yet radiation was used to reach those modifications. Most of the food you eat today was modified in this way. With radiation. Current GMO modifications are done without anything even close to that. You see, food has always been tweaked, but the ways to do it back then weren't exactly healthy. Seeds or pieces of budwood were exposed to gamma radiation in substantial doses. They would then sift through them all to find the ones with mutations to the DNA that ended up being beneficial. Thousands of our modern plant varieties were modified in this way before current GMO science became mainstream. Funny how nobody has any problems with that. Current GMO foods are developed without radiation and without randomness. The changes are precisely controlled. It's much better and more efficient than what we used to do. It sucks to realize you've been taken in by a scam, but the truth is most of us have when it comes to GMO-free propaganda put out by the wellness industry. They spent years spreading fear campaigns to make you want to pay more for their specially labeled products, effectively vilifying GMOs in the process. And it worked, because a lot of people are too naive and or lazy to bother looking further into things. If you really want to pay more for actual GMO-free products, then first look up if the product labeled GMO-free actually has a GMO option out there. If not, then it's a labeling trick to fool you into paying more. Also, whether something is GMO or not means nothing when it comes to our health. In fact, without GMO foods, most of the world would starve. And there are many foods we all enjoy today that would have gone extinct from disease if not for GMO interference to save them. Follow the criticisms to the source. Then check out the actual studies and people who work in these industries. Pretty much anything anti-GMO you find online comes directly from the organic food and wellness industries. Be skeptical, damn it. The organic label can be as deceptive as the non-GMO label. While organics are grown without the use of certain herbicides, pesticides, and fertilizers, they still do use pesticides. But the pesticides they use don't work very well, so they have to spray their crops much more heavily and much more often. Organic pesticides are just that, organic. They're made from plants, minerals, or microbes. Just because they are organic, naturally occurring compounds does not mean they are safe. A poisonous plant is totally organic, and it will still kill you. The mineral-based pesticides used are not good components to be allowing to soak into the soil and leak into the waterways. But because of how heavily they have to be sprayed, they do end up in soil and water. Organic crops are also commonly tainted from chemicals carried by the wind from neighboring crops, and this is forgiven for the most part. If you buy organic, be aware that testing for residue is not common in the US. So you are trusting the label itself and paying out more money without any true assurance that the crop is actually chemical free. The organic industry itself was once dubbed the field of schemes for its vulnerability to scammers and con artists. Randy Constant is an example of someone who was caught. He sold non-organic grain as organic grain for about a decade, and the whole time people saw him as an honorable organic farmer. He made use of the irregular and incomplete audits from inspections to get away with this. The fraud in the industry has taken away any integrity the label may have once held. More people are being skeptical about it now, and that's completely reasonable. At home, you may be able to make organic, safe pesticide from things like orange peels, garlic, onions, or even hot peppers, but these are not feasible on an industrial scale of farming. That's part of the reason why no product marked organic will ever be healthier and cleaner than what you yourself grow. Don't pay more for the organic label. Just like with the non-GMO labeling, it's more about making you pay more than any actual environment or health benefits. Be skeptical, damn it! Fred Phelps was one of those Christians full of vitriol and hate. He basically used the Bible to be a bastard. Some of the words I came across to describe the man were vile, unpleasant, and aggressive. In 1952, he was profiled in Time for his street ministry against people making out in cars. Sounds like a fun guy, right? Phelps was hired as an assistant pastor with a branch of the East Side Baptist Church in 1954. 1 year later, he was promoted to pastor of a newly opened church, Westboro Baptist. He immediately began his fire and brimstone type preaching, and it wasn't long before ties with East Side Baptist were cut completely and he took over the church. He alienated himself from other church leaders, and most of his original congregation left. In the end, the church was mostly made up of his relatives and some close friends. This did nothing to stop or even slow his insanity. Phelps preached that scriptures were literally true and that only a predetermined number of people would be welcomed into heaven. He also preached that all of these predetermined people were chosen for redemption before the world was even created. Oh, and all other churches are bogus. His was the only legitimate church. That's common with religious cults. He also preached that the Jews killed Jesus and God hates them for it, so super racist as well. His preachings were so out there that for a while those on the right thought he was some sort of plant. They thought the Democrats must have hired him to act like a nutjob in the name of the Bible. But nope, that behavior was just who Fred Phelps was. What he built out of those who stayed was a far-right Christian-based cult of which he was the patriarch-in-chief. He had complete control over everyone, which included his 13 children, though four did eventually escape. The church even created a community where its members could live and raise their kids together. The houses were arranged around one giant backyard. Because of the way they were raised, particularly the vitriol which was instilled in them from birth, the children from the cult were alienated in both school and society as a whole. This kind of forced them to stay. If they felt strongly about the beliefs they were raised with, then there was nowhere else they could go and be accepted. Would you become friends with someone who believed you, your loved ones, and all your friends were all sinners going to hell? Would you become friends with someone who wears shirts that say, "God hates F-slurs"? It's no wonder they couldn't go anywhere else with those beliefs. The picketing began in 1991 at Gage Park in Topeka. Phelps called it a den of anonymous homosexual activity. People throughout the city were soon aware of them and their protests. And within a few years of this, the church members were traveling all over the country to do their picketing. They took advantage of the system and used lawsuits to continue to fund their bigoted cult. They sued Topeka several times for failing to provide sufficient protection during their protests, usually settling or winning. To assist with this, Fred founded a law firm to represent all of their civil suits, and all five attorneys who worked there were his own kids. While Fred himself had been a lawyer before preaching life, he was disbarred by the Kansas Supreme Court in 1979 for, quote, having little regard for the ethics of his profession, unquote. Not exactly a surprise. They won a lawsuit in 1995 against the Kansas Funeral Picketing Act, which they claimed violated their First Amendment rights. In 1998, they picketed the funeral of Matthew Shepard, who was killed in a hate crime. They held signs that said Matthew Shepard is burning in hell and thank God for AIDS. They went on to try to get approval to build a granite monument in a public park in Casper, Wyoming with the inscription, Matthew Shepard entered hell October 12, 1998 in defiance of God's warnings. What the fuck? When denied that permission, they put a supposed memorial on their website which showed this victim of violence burning in hell. They really are a disgusting, hateful cult. There was a play based around Matthew Shepard's murder and how it impacted the local community. It was being put on in the UK, so Phelps made plans to go overseas and picket this as well. But trying to do his thing outside the US turned out to be harder than he expected. Britain banned both Fred and Shirley Phelps before they could become a problem. The ban went through just 2 days before the planned protest. The reason given was that they had engaged in unacceptable behavior by inciting hatred against a number of communities. It was also made clear that other church members could be tagged, stopped, and turned back if they attempted to go without their leaders. They were banned from other countries for their hateful ways, too. The church had a news release in 1998, and in it, the anti-LGBT vitriol was just gross. I'm going to share just a few of the hateful statements and protests the Westboro Baptist Church were responsible for. And warning, everything I'm about to share is extremely offensive. They called 9/11 a direct outpouring of divine retribution, declaring it God's wrath and vengeance for America's gay people. When two sets of twin girls drowned in horrific separate incidents in Massachusetts in 2010, most saw it as a pair of awful tragedies. Fred Phelps used it to continue to push his agenda of hate, blaming their deaths on the state's 2004 legalization of same-sex marriage. Fred had the church picket a restaurant every day for 3 years because the owner knowingly employed a lesbian. The church also declared that LGBT acceptance was responsible for God sending the Sandy Hook shooter. And so many soldiers' funerals. Those were the worst. People going through the worst days of their lives. A child or a parent is dead. And they would sit up outside the funeral with the most vile signs and writings on their shirts. And young children would be wearing these shirts and holding these signs. Some of them said, God hates F-slurs. Some of them said, God hates Jews. Some said, thank God for dead soldiers. And some even said, thank God for AIDS. Why would they do this? They said soldiers were being killed because of the acceptance of LGBT people in the US. Fucking assholes. When that young man was beheaded on a Greyhound bus in Canada several years ago, they made plans to come here to picket the young man's funeral. Sick, right? Thankfully, Canada quickly had them barred from entry, and the funeral was able to go on without their sick interruptions. In the last 2 decades, over 20 members have left, including 4 of Fred's children. Each and every one was cut off completely. Those who made attempts to reach out to family members were just ignored. The kids of his who left have gone on to do well for themselves. They've told their stories, and it's horrific how children are being brought up in that cult. They talk about the atmosphere of fear and of being beaten with axe handles and forced to sell candy in the streets to make money to support the church and its people. Nathan Phelps, one of his sons, became an LGBT rights and atheist activist. I've been following him for quite a few years now. Megan Phelps Roper wrote a book called Unfollow. In it, she talks about what it was like to be a very young child at these hateful protests, but that's just a small part of it. Her book goes into life on the compound and growing up there. Fred Phelps died in 2014, but his descendants unfortunately continue to run the church. Even more unfortunately, with the move to theocracy in the US over the last 8 years, their form of extremism may actually be accepted by Republican representatives one day soon, if it's not already by some. Cystic fibrosis is a rare, progressive, life-threatening disease. It causes a thick mucus to build up in a person's lungs, digestive tract, and other parts of the body, which leads to severe respiratory and digestive issues, along with a slew of other complications, such as infection and diabetes. The cause is a defective protein that results from a mutation in the CFTR gene. I wonder if there will one day be a CRISPR story to share in regards to cystic fibrosis. That would be pretty awesome. On top of everything else these patients have to deal with, they also have to frequently be hospitalized for treatment of a common bacterium called Pseudomonas aeruginosa, or PA. It's one of those things that just lives in the environment. There's probably some in your sink drain right now. While it may not have much of an effect on you or me, it can become a disease that will destroy the lungs when contracted by cystic fibrosis patients. Quick treatment is urgent because even with the antibiotics, it can only be eradicated in early stages. Most cystic fibrosis patients will contract it at least once by the time they're in their late teens. Up to now, the only treatment has been providing intravenous antibiotics, keeping them stuck in a hospital until it clears. For some of them, this can be a two-week stay. It's a traumatic thing for those who are very young, as well as their loved ones. And for all patients, it disrupts all aspects of life. Home, school, work. 2 weeks in hospital is a big deal. And can you imagine what the cost of a two-week stay in the hospital would be in a place like the U.S.? It's not just inconvenient, but expensive enough to bankrupt a family. If you or someone you know has had to go through IV antibiotics, you know what a pain in the ass it can be. A friend of mine was lucky that she didn't have to be hospitalized, but it was still a major pain for her to go to the clinic to spend several hours every single day. The inconvenience and disruption for cystic fibrosis patients may be coming to an end, while it still has to be caught as early as possible. A study has found that oral and inhaled antibiotics are just as effective as intravenous antibiotics in killing PA. Taking IV antibiotics out of their lives is going to make a huge difference to quality of life for thousands of patients. This new information means that they will be able to stay home to be treated, where they can be comfortable and surrounded by their loved ones. And don't forget, this would also mean them taking up less beds in hospitals. The study, funded by NIHR, National Institute for Health and Care Research, consisted of 286 cystic fibrosis patients at 70 cystic fibrosis centers and clinics around the UK, and two in Italy. It spanned a 10-year period, and the findings have been published in The Lancet Respiratory Medicine. That's all for today. Please consider subscribing to the YouTube for short skeptical videos. Thank you for joining me. May your health and sanity continue to be replenished daily. My eternal gratitude goes out to the following people. Jason Martin for helping me get started on this project over 4 years ago. I wouldn't be doing this right now if not for him. Kathy Rayner for her musical contribution on the violin. Paul Palmer for his musical contribution on the guitar. He can be found at WPG Suitcase Drummer on Instagram. Dustin Harder for composing and recording the intro and outro for the show. You can find him on Instagram at Prairie Soul Music. I hope you will choose to join me again in 2 weeks for episode 110 of Living Through Extinction. If you enjoy Living Through Extinction and would like to support the show, the best ways to do so are to subscribe and rate and comment and like positive comments on your favorite podcast player. Or you can help out by following, liking, and sharing on all the social medias. The show can be found under Living Through Extinction on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, YouTube, Pinterest, and TikTok, and under LTE Pod on Blue Sky, Hive, Tribal, and Twitter. There is also a Patreon at patreon.com/livingthroughextinction. There you can earn stickers, pins, masks, and more, as well as help me to plant some trees. If you have any comments, corrections, questions, or suggestions, please email them to livingthroughextinction@gmail.com or message me through one of the social medias.